Accession number 4621, Reel 2.
Second tape of conversation with Anthony Gross. Now, in your time in the Middle East, you also visited Beirut, I believe.
Yes. Yes, I was there with Edward Borden. I'd found myself a sort of pension de famille, which later on turned out to be a most extraordinary place, really, if I was up to date better. Because one half of it was a place that was a midwife, a midwifery woman, and the other half was a hotel. And so there we were, and Borden was there, and he said, "Tony, something tells me this is a strange place." I said, "Well, it is a strange place, really, yeah. But it's quite comfortable, food's good, it's cheap. What are we worrying about?" So we did. And so, however, Mohammed was there, Borden's manservant, who was from the second category. He said, "Tony, there's something wrong with Mohammed. I think he's getting ill or something, or he's homesick. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have arranged a little fishing for him? I think that would bring back the Nile, and he was a fisherman there." Says, "All right, what can we do?" So I suddenly remembered I had this letter from Glenner, or Lieutenant Commander Glenner, whatever it was.
The Admiralty. The
Admiralty chap. And I took that round to the port and found myself into the offices of a couple of young naval officers, and told my letter, introduction. They said, "What can we do for you?" And I said, "Well, it's not very much, really. What we want to do, Borden and me, and is to take Mohammed here fishing." Explain the reason why. Oh, I could easily arrange that. And they did. And so next day we returned to turn up, and this morning the boat would be waiting for us with bait and line and all we needed. So there we were. We had the greatest difficulty getting Mohammed down to the boat. He kept on hiding and running away. But finally, Borden collected him and grabbed him and brought him by the ear down to the boat. We put him on, away we went. We anchored in the middle of the harbour, started fishing. But whereupon Mohammed started howling, oh my tummy, it's terrible, oh put me ashore, I'm dying. So this went on a bit, so finally we put him ashore and he just disappeared like that. Up the beach and round and away, and that was it. And then we found, of course, what it was, that at our establishment he'd made himself an appointment with one of the ladies.
Oh.
And if he'd been looking sick, he was that was love sickness. And that was all. In any case, he nipped back and got back, we presume, just in time for his rendezvous.
And Borden was sympathetic to that, I'm sure.
Well, Borden was quite sympathetic. Yes. I think he rather disapproved, but he was sympathetic.
But you carried on with your fishing trip.
Oh yes, we went back fishing and got us some fish and at the pension, whatever it was called, I've forgotten its name. They fried them up for us. We ate them. That was it.
Good. Now, after the Middle East, you went right out to India and Burma.
Oh yes, then I was called back to Cairo after quite an interlude in Persia as well, where I tried to get into Russia. But the Russian opposite number said, "Oh, of course you go, just 1 minute, I need a letter from my superior." And of course the superior never came. And after about a month, no, they wouldn't, they had no intention of letting me in.
Mm.
None whatsoever. They didn't want any people there. Unless one was accredited to some newspaper. Anyway, so I came back and I was called back. "Hurry up, come back. Where are you? You're lost. When you're needed, you're never there. Come on, hurry back. Very important."
What's thing this? The public
do.
Relations people.
This public relations car, you see, they found me. And so I nipped back. Well, I went back quietly and got back to Cairo. And there I found that I had been transferred to the Indian Army. As they say, "Well, you'll be leaving." They look like this. "On Friday at such and such an hour." And so there it was. And so I got on board this troop ship. And that took a hell of a long time. We went all the way up to Baghdad and Basra, then all the way back down, all the way. It took 7 or 8 weeks again on board ship. With an extraordinary consignment of Polish refugees, which we picked up
at, for...
who never went anywhere. Because I met one day, long time after, I met one of the officers from this ship, and he said, you know, we went round the world with these refugees for a couple of years. And he said, I left the ship at the end. I don't know what happened to them. Nobody ever knew what happened to them. They went on taking them. Nobody wanted them.
Nobody would take them in.
So what happened there, I don't know. In any case, after that, we went to India with these refugees, and they were piled up. They were put in a concentration camp or camp in India. And that was the last I saw of them. And then I was in India.
You must have been the first official artist in India.
Well, one or two, when I got there, I found one or two people had sort of made themselves official war artists.
What, locally?
Locally. That is with the Indian Army, you see.
Yes.
And a very nice young man who called, what was he, Beecham. Photographer.
Mm.
Nice man. And he married one of Churchill's daughters, I think. And he was out there as a captain. And he was doing drawings. As soon as I came there, and I went out into the Chin Hills and back and showed him all my drawings. He said, sorry, chapeau, I give up. He said, in the time that you've done about 300 chins, I haven't finished one. Oh, okay. So he, very nice young man.
But you know, with that long journey out, how did you manage for supplies of paper and pens, materials?
Well, I picked up a lot in Cairo.
Yes.
Some very good art shops in Cairo.
Still with supplies?
Oh, still with Italian paper.
Yes.
Had some very good Italian, I forget his name now, very nice watercolour paper, very good paper. And that, with the bits of paper I brought out with me, they helped.
Yes.
Kept on, I used that. And then again in India, I think, I can't remember. Or I must have had some shipped out to me.
Yes.
I can't remember.
Well, when you'd arrived in India, did they give you a briefing about the area of Burma that you were going into?
When I went, I was told to report to Brigadier Jihu, who was the head of public relations. He was ex-editor of the Indian Times or
yes.
something. Or Omar or something. And so I went and saw him in Delhi, and he said, now you're going straight down to the Arakan and do some work down there, and then you will go up to Imphal and see the Tilim Road being built.
Now, at what stage was the campaign at this time? Do you remember?
Oh, it was a very, very ropey thing. It was very bad. Well, the retreat had stopped.
Yes.
At Kohima, Imphal sort of area. And at Arakan, there was the Arakan, and the troops were... The Japs held Arakan itself, the town of Arakan, and we were in the jungle around there. But a very demoralised lot of people.
What, the troops who were...?
The English troops there.
Really?
Very demoralised. They were very, very nervy and jumpy.
Were they still suffering from this view that the Japanese soldier was almost invincible at that time?
No, I don't think they thought he was invincible, but they were terrified of his sort of infiltration methods of getting in like that and slitting the throats of a couple of chaps, you know, in their tents asleep and disappearing again. But getting them down a bit, that sort of thing. But I don't think the invincibility of the Japanese really.
No.
No, I don't think they liked them.
The Indian troops? What was there?
I don't know what the Indian troops' view of the Japanese was at all. No, I don't know. I think they as long as the officers were fighting and keeping the morale going, they were being paid and being fed. And they were all right, as far as I could see. That's my impression was. Yes.
But you could never have imagined previously that you would have gone to such an area to work as an artist.
Never.
So.
Never.
Visually, it must have been...
It was quite extraordinary. It was quite extraordinary. Especially when I left Calcutta, I went down by boat to some port or other. I can't remember. Akyab. I went to Akyab. Might have been Akyab. And I finally got to Akyab. That was the final place. We went by boat to something bizarre. Got off a boat at some down Bundy's Bazaar or something. I can't remember his name. Got off there. And then we went by lorry on through the jungle. Let's see, through all these. You see, in the villages, you had all these beautiful people. Sort of, what were they? They weren't Indians. They were already the slit-eyed, the Burmese type people. And they were beautiful people. And there they were all in there, sitting in their little gardens or on their little verandas, sewing away, cooking or doing the things. They were absolutely the most beautiful sight.
Yes.
Flowers everywhere, gleaming brass pots and things. Very beautiful.
And the vegetation?
Vegetation, well, that might have been, I suppose, really. It might have been Hampstead, might have been anywhere. Hampstead Heath or... nothing very extraordinary, no. Not at all what one imagined.
Really?
It was just ordinary countryside, as far as I was concerned. Then when I got up into the Karakhan there, it was bamboo.
Yes.
That was like a sort of screen everywhere. And you could look through. You look through like a tent or like a... No shadows.
Did it not give a problem in terms of light?
Oh, contrary for me, it was beautiful. It was like the Italian Renaissance paintings. Early Renaissance paintings, where they used to paint under tents in their courtyards. You had the same sort of light. As you could see every detail of a face, you see.
Yes. Mm. And it was in the bamboo jungle that you came pretty close to the Japanese lines, I believe.
Oh, yes, quite so, yes. Indeed, I could hear them talking.
Really?
Hear them talking, yes.
Which meant that they could hear you talking.
They could hear me talking. Yeah, but that was all. Then every now and again, a couple of mortars would sort of go bang near you. They'd sort of aimed it at the sound they could hear. You found yourself. You didn't think about it. You just found yourself in the slit trench. I mean, you never thought. You just were in it, you know.
Yes.
Instinctively, you were quickly in the slit trench as the mortar exploded.
And you spent a tremendous long time walking, didn't you, in that area?
Oh, yes. Well, in the Arakan, it was a very nice young man. Had some horses. I don't know what he was doing with horses, but he and I had a horse each, and we travelled all over the Arakan, different parts of the Arakan, meeting various regiments. See, all the regiments were so delightful there. Delightful people.
The English regiment,
the Irish regiments, there was the Inniskillen Fusiliers. They were delightful. I mean, there I was on this horse, trying to, crossing this brook. And the chap with me said, for God's sake, don't let the horse drink. I wasn't good enough soldier, horseman, to stop the horse drinking. So he just knocked me off and drank. He just sort of shook me off. I fell in the river.
Yes.
And as I got up, I was soaking wet out of the river. It didn't matter much. It was very hot. And there was the entire platoon of a company of the Inniskillen Fusiliers going by, marching by, roaring with laughter. You see, an officer thrown off his horse.
A number of them knew you already, I suppose.
No. Then a couple of the officers came over to ask if they could help, and they were most delightful people. Irishmen, and they came along and said, look here, who put up this horse for it? Look, the saddle's all loose. He said, come on, give it your help. And he tightened the saddle and got everything right. And now, if you need any help, come and see us. We're the Inniskillen Fusiliers. Nice man. After that, he was an amateur painter himself.
Yes.
I tell you what I was doing, and he saw the thing. And after the war, I met up with him again, and he arrived one day at my studio in Chelsea at that time, with MacNeice, Louis MacNeice the poet. He was a great friend. They were sort of, every time now and again you met with people who had, slight intellectual interests.
Mm.
Not often, occasionally. And then the others were delightful people.
Mm.
But they always, the further away you were from headquarters, the nicer people became.
That's interesting.
Always. They became freer, they became nicer, they became more relaxed, they were more natural.
Yes.
And they treated you absolutely delightfully. And of course, they were so pleased to see something about other things. They're all on their own. The other people, nice people, were the Lancashire Fusiliers. They were simple chaps, but they were nice. I did lots of drawings of them. And then there were the
Royal Sussex, weren't they?
There? Royal Sussex. I can't remember them. They may have been. And then the other was some Lincolnshire regiment there.
Yes.
And that's all they...
Then you moved then right up into higher ground, didn't you?
Well, then after that, after I'd done my drawing there, it was dicey country there again. You felt you weren't going to run your luck too long. I'd got a lot of work done there.
Yes.
And I'd seen a lot of many of the troops as I could, and met some delightful people who have since disappeared and killed, I think. Most of them were, I think, unfortunately, ultimately. I then decided it was a dangerous part of the world, so I thought I'd go up to Imphal. So I took a train, and the rest of it, and all the way up. It took several days, and finally arrived up at Imphal, and where I met this other unit, you see, which was the 14th Army being formed there. And they were building the road to Tidim, which is going to go all the way down up on the top of the mountains down into Burma. And so I went down. So finally we decided with another man called Potter, Jack Potter, and a chap with an Indian Army photographer, cine photographer, three of us, down walked. The way of going was to walk. So we walked, we got ourselves some mules with Indian drivers, we put our pack on that and food on that.
Local guides, I suppose.
No, we just followed the road down. And then after the road came to an end, we knew where we were going, and we found out, I don't quite know how we did. I suppose Jack Potter looked after that.
But what about the Chin levies? These are rather strange.
We came across them down in Tidim itself. Tidim was a little town. Of course, we had all these lovely villages we went through. Beautiful villages. Lovely villages with people there. And I drew them.
The costumes, well, it must have been extraordinary.
Costumes, well, they were... Yes, all bits of rag and stuff on them. Nothing. Then some little turbans on the head.
Different hairstyles?
Oh, yes, they had terrific... Oh, yes, they did. These are the Chins themselves. I'm talking really about the first people we met on the way down.
Yes.
I can't remember what they were, different tribes. Porters from different parts, carrying stuff down. Sort of general place that the people, general movement up and down. On the top of the hill, down the bottom, the Japanese. But up on the top of the hills were us. That's where we were building this road. But on both sides, down the bottom, the Japanese. As I pointed to on that thing where we're making a curry with that goat.
Tell me about that.
Well, there's a young Indian doctor with this Indian regiment, and we'd ridden. That was somewhere else, I'm sorry. This was down the Arakan.
Yes.
The Arakan still.
But never mind, tell me the story again.
Well, it was an Indian doctor there, and it was his birthday. Everybody discovered that it was his birthday, and they all liked him very much. They decided to cook him a meal, special treat, birthday party. And they noted with their things, glasses, that down in the certain house there was a goat tethered outside, a Japanese little unit, you see. So that night they went down and untied the goat and brought him up, and they killed him, and they made this curry, which was absolutely delicious. They didn't often have proper meat.
But that's when they also brought back parasols, wasn't it?
Oh yes, they had some parasols they'd picked up in the village. That's right, there were some parasols.
Where are they?
They were the Japanese had the parasols, presumably. I don't know why.
How strange.
I don't know what the reason was. I think if that was odd, I remember we had a very good curry. And that was another thing. However, then we're back in the Chin Hills. Then we arrived there. And when we arrived, finally, this was 500 miles. We finally arrived at the last descent before coming into the town of Tidim, where there was this regiment. And when we arrived sort of towards the first step, we were suddenly sprung on by a whole lot of chaps out of the foot behind stones, sort of rushed at us and with guns raised and sort of arrested us. Who are you? You see, they knew we were coming, so it was all laid on. And sort of,
these were local people?
These were the local English little unit down at Tidham.
Yes.
Who, had they been forewarned we were coming, but they didn't know who we were. They thought we were inspectors or something. So they showed how on the spot they were. So they sent a unit up to arrest us. And having been arrested, they then produced a whole lot of mules, which we sat on. And when Jack Potter, who was with me, got a horrible white mule, he tried to bite him all the way up the hill. He nearly did bite. They're horrible, very dangerous up there. Mostly, mine was quite bad. Anyway, you got up to the top there, and the great conversation. I remember the only thing that they were interested in, a few English officers who were running the Chin Levies regiment, were interested in was the fact that we, miles away, I said, we're coming to a village, aren't we? I could hear a cock crowing. And so, there wasn't a village, it was just a, and then we saw a whole lot of chicks running along the path, yeah. And a lot of fluttering of wings by its mum in the bush. Well, these were wild chickens, you see.
Right.
Yes, and so we told them that we'd seen these. Oh, you should have picked, why didn't you grab them? We indeed so, we could have fed them. We hadn't had roast chicken, you see,
yes.
In a few months' time. But we had wild chickens there, yes, in Hull, yes.
But being on the move all the time, did you find you had technical difficulties with your painting?
Not really, no problem, which I had solved in the desert already, was that the engine ink, you'd had to add mortar to it, because otherwise it was too thick, it wouldn't flow properly. Difficulty drawing with it, but once you got the right about sufficient water in it, it then worked very well.
And so right through the Burma period, you had no difficulty?
None at all, no. Watercolours. No, we couldn't do it. I had brought out oils, but that was impossible.
Yes.
You had to have something much more fluid and easy to control.
Yes. And how was your health throughout all this time?
Wonderful.
You didn't
have I had one bad flu, bout of flu in Cairo, just before leaving, which I cured by being on this ship going to India. Mm. I was there for all over Christmas. I was so happy to be on board a comfortable ship,
yes,
after really rough going.
But illnesses in the jungle?
None at all. None.
Malaria, problems of that sort?
No, not everybody else did. I didn't. I wore long trousers, which I
really
didn't put it down to, yes.
And that, you feel protected?
And also, I used to, as soon as the evening, I unrolled my sleeves and buttoned them at the bottom. Kept my hands on the table, not under the table, things like that. But there's a lot of precautions one can do.
Yes.
Because that's where they used to bite you, see, people get bitten. You know,
so. Was there, in fact, quite a lot of sickness among the units that you served with?
Well, I think there was, yes. I think a lot of them had malaria. You never really got your malaria until you went home on leave. Hmm. That's when it hit you, the change of climate, the change of thing. You went up to the mountains, when they went up on leave to the mountain. That's when they all went down with malaria, not with the unit. So it didn't affect them.
But you never had any...
Nothing at all. No.
That was marvellous.
I was very lucky. And careful, I was always very, very careful.
Have you ever been back to the East since the war?
No, I haven't, no. No.
Would you have liked to revisit any of the areas where you did all these
drawings? Not really. I don't think so, not really. I'd seen them, and it was an experience which I'd had, and an experience which was so exceptional, I wouldn't like to make it ordinary.
No.
By going back again and seeing it an ordinary way. It had a certain sort of intensity.
I'm
all
sure.
These places had enormous intensity for me. And
yes.
And which I, under that feeling, I worked, you see. A feeling of intensity, which I think comes through in the drawings.
Well, it does, and you produced so many drawings in a very short time.
Well, you had to work fast. I remember I got one of the genials, I got it down to that sort of thing. There was 1 hour ahead. That was it. That's line up, say, about 30 chins. And then I said, all right, all the people in the front were an hour each, so about 10, that's 10 hours. Well, let's sit down there and start drawing for 10 hours. And then the ones in the background, you could sort of fill them in. All that.
But the chins can never have seen anybody doing pictures
before. Oh, yes, they had their own artists.
Did they?
Yes, I've still got one. I shaped you. Yes. I have a thing they gave me. They had little sculptors. See, they had great sort of things about funerals. The great people. Funerals were very important to them. And they were very rather disgusting rites, but still there they were. And they used to take the corpse and then throw it on the floor, take it off and scrape all the horrible flesh off the bones.
And you witnessed it?
Well, sort of. Used to hear about it. Mm. I wouldn't say I actually witnessed it. No, I didn't. But I heard about it from people who had. And what they told me. And then they used to throw the flesh back. And then they used to wash all the bones and take them back to their village and bury them in their local graveyard. Well, then they used to have chaps who used to make some gravestones for them. And they did beautiful drawings of animals, cows and...
Drawings?
Engraved bas-relief drawings in slate. Oh, wow. I have one here. I'd kept to show you.
And the portraits that you did of them, did they take an interest in
them? Oh, they were very interested. Oh, yes, they were very interested. Oh, yes, they came and looked. Oh, yes, that's
me. But not superstitious about them?
Oh, no superstition at all, no. That was only in the Air Force.
Oh. And I suppose you communicated with them via these English officers who ran the levy groups, was that it?
Well, they produced them. I said I was doing that, but they said, all right, we'll produce them for you. Then I had to draw them as well, you see, as well, which I did occasionally.
Well, you had to be tactful and make sure...
Oh, you had to be tactful to get everybody happy. It's very important to be tactful.
Yes.
And play the game, play along with them all the time, otherwise you wouldn't work.
Yes, yes.
And you had to play go with them, and they like you would be friendly. They are, yes.
You must have spent about, 6 months or so out there altogether?
I can't remember. Not very long, I don't think so. In the end, I don't think it was frightfully long, I don't think so.
And how did you hear that you were going to move?
I decided I'd had enough in India. Yes, I remember this was it. Now, I was then told by somebody, because the after Alamein was all over, and the troops were in Sicily, and that sort of thing, and I heard that there was the 4th Indian Division. And I felt as I had been employed by the Indian Army, I should do drawings of the 4th Indian Division. So I applied to Jehu, and he accepted the idea. I wasn't very sure about it. He felt there was a rat. There was a rat. I was just trying to get home quietly, slowly. So I said, I'd like to go to Cairo, and I hear the 4th Indian Division are resting, and I will go there. So I went to Cairo, I flew there, and it's quite quick, and I got to Cairo, I went out to Alexandria, and there I met the most delightful person I met in the war, really, Chuka.
He was also
General Chuka.
General Chuka, yes.
Now, he was an amateur artist, as well as being a general, and he became afterwards governor of Ceylon or somewhere. And he said, I'm delighted we've got this. Last sent me an artist along. I was wondering when they were then to do that. And now you are, I want you to do this and this and this, and anything you want, you've got it. And let's get cracking. So I got cracking, and within about a week or fortnight, I'd done a whole series of drawings of all his different units.
Yes.
Which were there as the 4th Indian Division. They are in the museum.
Yes.
Computer Hall Museum. Yes. And that's how I finished. But once I'd finished those, I then reckoned I could go home. So I decided to go home. That it?